they were soldiers of fortune who paid a price to fight and win. On this assignment, they'll pay the ultimate price. Dolph Lundgren stars in Men of War, showing at cinemas near you.
This is Flight 2521 coming down to liftoff. As in five, we're dropping off the lethal mullet for you. Here he comes.
Thank you, pilot. And hey, how you going, everybody? Yay! Hey! Here's the lethal mullet. Yes, we've touched down here in Quinlan's Cantina. Ready for another ripper of an episode here at the Lethal Mullet Studios.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. And where you can also find The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials, as of course Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
And welcome, folks, to the one, the only Lethal Mullet. I'm your host, of course, Lethal Mullet himself, Adam O'Brien. And after two failed live attempts, we just can't seem to stay on the internet live right now. Internet connections being what they are, with the weather we're having right now, I would say, is probably half the problem. But that's all right. We're going to go video here for now. So tonight, here, we're going to be looking at the Men of War. Great 1994 film by, of course, Dolph Lundgren. And, of course, this is a film where he plays a character by the name of Gunner. I do believe we've had another film with him doing exactly the same, a character called Gunner. That's right. And of course, that is the Expendables series of films where he plays a mercenary. This one, he plays a mercenary as well, folks. That's right. This is quite a good film. And this is one that back in 94 came out straight to VHS here in Australia. And it's always been one that's been a bit harder to find in the last few years. It was not on DVD. It certainly wasn't on Blu-ray here either. And we just can't seem to get a hold of this film unless you're lucky enough to get the Australian VHS. Now, the reason we can know it is definitely a VHS of Australia is, of course, Movie World. That's right. It says Movie World, Hollywood on the Gold Coast. And, of course, by Village Roadshow, which is one of the distributors out here in Australia, particularly in those years. This is a great film. Yes, it's on VHS here, but don't let that fool you. VHS is still freaking awesome. I love it. And this one is a great man on a mission sort of a movie. Obviously, we've got Dolph leading the group. We've got a whole heap of people in it that you'll know from different things. We've got two cast members of JAG in this. We've also got Tiny Lister, the President of the United States of America from Fifth Element. Great actor. We've also got in it Trevor Goddard, of course, from JAG. And, of course, he also was Kano, notorious for being the guy that always wanted to be Aussie, even though he was British-born. So he's always had a sort of mystique about, you know, g'day mate, how you going? My name is Trevor Goddard, and yeah. And of course he played that into roles like Kano, which we saw, you know, even the new edition of Mortal Kombat, which is, you know, far more gritty. Well, if you can make a video game adaptation gritty. But we also got Australian in that as well. Australian comedian played the main role of Kano. And of course, you know, you're running out of beer. Your beer's crap. He says it too, very Aussie. This film's on my top list of Dolph Lundgren films to watch, folks. It is a film with a message. It is not like B grades of today. This is more of an A grade style, even though it's definitely a straight to video. Here in Australia, it was anyway. But it's got a message. It's obviously a great one, particularly with Dolph in this. Dolph is playing a mercenary with a heart, and you certainly see the difference between that and some of the other actors in this playing mercenaries, which are, you know, they're there for bottom dollar. It's a little bit different, I suppose. So, you're going to get that, unfortunately. Just one of those things. May I say, though, a big thanks to all that checked out the Matrix episode I just put out, of course, about the Matrix Resurrections, the brand new sequel to the Matrix. And one of the great things about this film is that it's going to be answering questions and answering questions, but also posing more questions, I think. And there's a lot of imagery that is central to, not the sequel so much, but more about, I think, the first film. There's a lot of imagery that requires us to really, I think, rewatch the trailer over and over. There's the music itself, which even is called White Rabbit. So, you know, which is a great track, by the way, I've got to say. I do believe by Jefferson Starship, if I remember right. Great song. But then there's the Alice in Wonderland references in there too. And we get to see the blue pill, the red pill, all this sort of stuff's there. And yes, there's some spoilery stuff that probably you need to figure out yourself, because I don't want to spoil what is already there. It's right in front of you. If you're asking the questions, which I know you no doubt will, as Matrix fans, they're all in the trailer. It's a very well-designed trailer to give you the answers that you need as to who is fighting Keanu in that dojo. Yeah, it looks like a character we know. It's a lot of same. There's things like that. So there's, obviously, you remember, it's about simulacra, simulation. It's about, you know, really defining, you know, what is the Matrix, and what is real? And again, what do we define as real? And that's a very big part of what the Wachowskis were trying to put together in the first trilogy, and, you know, all the others. Now, is this going to tie into all of the Matrix films, as in Matrix-related and Revolutions? Or is this going to be set apart and be another history, or another, maybe just tied to the first film? These are sorts of questions that are rolling in my mind. I have no idea whether those are real or not. Again, what is real? But there's a lot riding on the first film due to the imagery. So that's why I posed that question. Are they looking back at what happened in sequels? I mean, no doubt they will. But I think it's more a case of, it's a revisiting in some ways of a lot of the events of the first film. Obviously, we've got Trinity, and we've got Neo being the cornerstone of this. But we've got some interesting cast members, which, yeah, go and check out the episode. That's all I'll say. Episode number 119. We also have coming out for you, just as this is being recorded, we're editing currently, a show that we did with Kevin, the Raider Nerd Reitzel. And this one was all about a film called Runaway. Now, this is starring Tom Selleck, and it is a film which is all about robots, AI, and of course, robots that go haywire. And he plays a detective which is basically designed to go out and find these robots and those that are committing homicides. Okay, so it's robots taking on humans and basically murdering them. And obviously there's an ulterior motive with some interesting villains. And let's just say one that plays a hell of a bass guitar. The cast of this one was huge. We've got Cynthia Rhodes co-starring, along with Kirstie Alley and Gene Simmons, of course, of Kiss. And in that episode, Kevin himself has some really, really interesting news about Gene Simmons and an event which he went to with Gene Simmons many, many years ago. So stay tuned for that, because it's an interesting story. And knowing Kevin, he tells stories very, very well like that too. And if it's got Gene Simmons, it's got to be good, right? This also wraps up a series of films which we've looked at with Gene Simmons, where first being, of course, Wanted Dead or Alive, we did last year or the year before, I can remember, with Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel himself. And then, of course, we did the Tarantino-loved film. Tarantino didn't make this film, but he loved it. And, of course, it starred Gene Simmons in a rock and roll surfy role in Red Surf. And, of course, it starred George Clooney and Michelle Pfeiffer's sister.
Hi, mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah, yeah. What shall it be?
Oh, yeah. Man, it's been a real busy day, you know?
Right, I'm
yeah.
Like,
hey. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, having a nice, you know, cold beverage and enjoy the show about, you know, films and all that sort of stuff.
Well, here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this.
All right, so as we've done news segment already on the previous episodes, folks, we're going to get pretty much straight into the Lethal Pub. So bear with us, folks, as we knock down pints and have some nibblies as we get into chatting about this amazing film. All right, so Men of War. Men of War is a film which I didn't really know much about when it first came out in the 90s. I knew Dolph Lundgren's work quite well from, of course, his work on Masters of the Universe, his work on Rocky IV, obviously, slogging the crap out of Stallone. We also saw him in many other roles at the time. There was a whole heap of straight-to-VHS stuff that he did, like roles like Cover Up, which he did co-starring with, of course, his friend and obviously actor in Punisher as well, Louis Gossett Jr., which was just a great one. We had Cover Up. We had Pentathlon, which was an interesting film as well. Red Scorpion, which is a bit of an action classic. Again, one that's definitely got some great stunts and a bit of a message in that one too. And there's a great new addition to that out too if you haven't seen it. But Men of War wasn't what I was expecting to sort of see come out. And particularly, Dolph has always been one that is either a great villain, like in Universal Soldier, great as Sergeant Andrew Scott, and who would have thought that that series of films would continue like it has and has. It's done a fantastic job of really supplementing, I think, the sci-fi Terminator sort of feel, zombies. I mean, they are zombies, basically. Soldiers that are brought back from the dead. Done in such a way is a lot of fun. Dolph has that sort of theatrical ability to really bring out characters much larger than his co-stars. Jean-Claude Van Damme, as much as I love him, doesn't have that pedigree of acting. He's a great actor. I personally think in the material that he has and what he's given, he's certainly an amazing athlete. But Lundgren has all that and is still able to punch out a much, much larger capacity to act. And I think one of the great ones is shows like Showdown in Little Tokyo that he did with, of course, Brandon Lee, the late Brandon Lee, a couple of years before he did The Crow. Again, very comedic, Tango and Cash-like, movie, but one that was definitely bang on a lot of fun. You know, it was one that really hit its stride. Very short film, though, I've got to say. And of course has a great villain in Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. I mean, Tagawa's always reliable to bring on a great performance, and without a doubt, you get something similar in this with the villain of this piece as well. And let's get into chatting about it, folks. Let's really get into the heart of what this film is all about. So, Men of War is a film directed by Perry Lang, written by John Sayles. And it's basically got the lead of Dolph Lundgren playing the character of Nick Gunner. Now, of course, you know the name Gunner is used by him also in another series of films, a series very much like this Man on a Mission series, Dirty Dozen style mercenary series, of course, like Expendables, because that's what it's called. And it's a great role in this as well, because it basically is the same idea. It is, in this case, he's the Barney Ross of the group. So in this, Nick Gunner has to basically put together a group of former special operations troops and lead these mercenaries to a treasure island, basically, in the South China Sea. That's it. That's as simple as the plot is. And I think that's why it gives the chance for this amazing cast that we've got. I mean, when you hear some of the names, folks, you'll know what I mean. These are not huge names, but they're names you know from action cinema. So we've got in this Dolph Lundgren as Nick Gunner. Now, I will say this is, I think, alongside Sergeant Andrew Scott, and probably his role in the Army of One, or as we know out here, the Joshua Tree. I do believe it's been renamed in the States the Joshua Tree already. So there you go. You could probably find it on DVD for that too. That's a great film, folks, which Kevin the Raider Nerd Reisel is going to be joining us here for, I think, soon as well. It's one of his faves. So we've got Dolph Lundgren playing Nick Gunner, and yes, it could be very much tied to his character. Maybe this is his original team before he got a little bit older and a bit crustier, and he wanted to hang pirates. It's good to hang pirates, apparently. We've got Charlotte Lewis as Loki in this. Charlotte Lewis, fantastic in, obviously, The Golden Child. You know, just this one, really good too, because she kind of, I think, at one stage there in the movie, the scene is kind of just the second lead to the native population on the Treasure Island that they go to. But she turns out to be not only that, but a fierce warrior. And she's fantastic in the role. We got B.D. Wong as Poe, who again is really, I think, one of the hidden treasures of this movie that just really pushes the film and the narrative of course, of the island itself, and what is treasure, and what is the treasure, and compared to people, and also, you know, what people are worth to each other, as well as family and stuff like that too. He does a really good job of that too. We got Anthony Dennison as Jimmy G, Tim Guinea as Ocker, Don Harvey as Nolan. Now, Don Harvey, you're going to know from some great movies, some of them being Die Hard 2, and of course, at the start of The Untouchables. He's the one that's sitting in that massive snowplow, and Elliot Ness goes, "You got a family?" Lots of stuff. They lighting up cigarette or whatever they do in that scene before they go and take on those crates filled with umbrellas from Hong Kong. Interesting. We've got Tom Lister, or Tom Tiny Lister, obviously the late, great, amazing President Lindbergh of The Fifth Element. Really interesting character, I always thought, and the particularly in this one, he's somebody that's the epitome of what the definition of mercenary is in this too. Because again, he's not good or bad. He is just, it's all about the job and the money. We also have Harold Thomas Wright as Jamal. Catherine Bell, of course, you're going to know from JAG and Army Wives. Great in this. She does a fantastic job of playing mercenary that definitely lines up with Dolph Lundgren's character's sensibilities when it comes to the moral compass and all that. And she's tough as nails in this. So, again, not wasted talent like some other movies and stuff do with the co-stars, where they just, you know, they're literally filling in the action role of the people that get killed. You know, like the red shirts, obviously, on Star Trek. No, Catherine Bell kicks ass in this. But then we have, of course, Trevor Goddard. obviously Kano, who played Mick Brumby on JAG, and he's always been back in the day a fantastic I think character. You see him pop up in all sorts of things on TV and some film. This plays the role of Kiefer, which is an old teammate and friend of Dolph's character Gunner, and there's just a really good let's just say head-to-head between those two, the way that we go through it. He's fearful of Gunner. He knows the power of Gunner, and I think that's why he uses a lot of cheap shots in this to get at Gunner. But again, really, really good. We have also Kevin Tai of Roadhouse, folks. Yes, the guy that owns the Double Deuce, the one that gets the backup and wants to pull things together. And of course, he's been a lot of different stuff. Known for the TV show Emergency back in the 70s, which he was in five seasons of. We've also got Thomas Gibson. He was in Chicago and Dharma and Greg, obviously, too. He plays Warren in this, and it's an interesting role. Again, part of the spoilery ending, which I'm not going to say. You just got to watch the movie. But it's sort of, you know, when you finally see what is happening on the island, and you see what they're really after, it's the payoff is pretty funny. We also have Perry Lang as Lyle. We also have Alfredo Sanchez Brel as Aldo Sombrel in this as well. Again, really, really interesting cast. Again, these are actors you probably don't remember from certain other things here and there. Anthony John Cerero is Anthony Dennison is a fantastic talent in this. And he's playing Jimmy G. Now, Jimmy's great because, again, he's sort of caught in the middle here. He's a guy that's obviously a mercenary that's worked with both sides. And he's there for the money. But he's at that point where he doesn't know whether he wants to do the right thing and help the native people of the island or whether you do one or the other. So, again, very, very interesting. But the takeaways from this definitely are Charlotte and BD Wong, who pretty much as the action stars in this try to run the film, they are the real leads, and they do a hell of a job doing it too. So let's give you an idea about the plot. So Nick's an ex-soldier, and he's basically running down on his luck in Chicago. So we see that at the start of the film. It's a typical snowy, cold, miserable winter in Chicago. And then he's basically offered a job by these two characters who, come along, and he doesn't know. These aren't the kind of people he usually deals with. These are serious suits who don't really know much about the mercenary life and stuff like that too. Again, these are ones that say you've got to put together a group of soldiers, go over there, and basically work out some way of getting this island, in their hold so they can take what they need there. So without too much notice of what's actually happening on the island itself and what they've got to do there, they arrive there and straight away run into Kiefer. So he's got this group, obviously the characters we mentioned. So he's got Blades, Jamal, Nolan, Ocker, and Jimmy G. And of course, they run into there also with Grace, played by Catherine Bell. And it's this big pub scene, which is really good because it's sort of amping up what the group's about. And we get to see some usual thugs and stuff like that in that scene. But then blowing it all up is, of course, Trevor Goddard. The late, great Trevor Goddard comes in as Kiefer and really hams it up as campy as the villains could get. He's really playing it well in this one. Again, it's probably one of his better performances that he had in his career. So what's interesting about this is we get to see Kiefer and Nick Gunner have a catch-up, but it's a very ham-fisted one where Lundgren is basically kept to taking all the hits from Kiefer. Particularly goes, this isn't the same fight. This is, I hit you. I freaking hit you. And then I freaking hit you. It's the way it's sort of played out. It's really, really interesting. But of course, we know that Kiefer's going to get it at the end. There's always that sort of comeback or comeuppance that the character's going to get down the line. And again, he's the kind of he's dim-witted villain when he goes about it. So then Nick and the crew go to the island, which they find has a group of native population there that are really, really fun-loving, peace-loving. And again, they're supposed to be convinced by the mercenaries to basically leave the area so they could leave it to these investors, these two that have set them on the mission. But when they turn up there, they're straight away, the first thing they say is, we're not leaving. We're not going anywhere. And this is part of, I think, the education of Nick Gunner. He might be this, he's not naive. He certainly could see that there's going to be conflict. And part of it is these tooled up, weapon-packed mercenaries up against natives who pretty much outsmart them at every turn by literally using just their intelligence. They are far more advanced when it comes to what the soldiers are going to do. Soldiers think it's going to be a walkover when it's not. And it's not the first people that have tried to take the island. So there's a lot of that sort of going through the first 60 minutes of the movie or so. And then from there, we have some interesting stuff where we get to see Nick and particularly the team split up after he says, well, look, you know what? It's the wrong thing to do here. We can't just kick these people off the island. They don't know exactly what the treasure is. There's all those things in their bits. Is it opals? Is it diamonds? All those sorts of things. And they have no idea what it's all about and to figure out what the actual thing itself is too. So with that, they split up. The other team, which is pretty much with Blades, so Tom Lister and the rest of them go back to working for, of course, Colonel Merrick, played by Kevin Tai, and of course with Kiefer, and of course the two industrialists, Warren and Lyle. So all of the natives and them are obviously going to have to go up against these heavily tooled mercenaries. Nick has basically able to figure out a way of doing it too. So basically to, you know, bring it all about. But again, the big thing about the movie is, you know, perception of the peoples of an island, particularly the natives, and the perception of what are they actually there for. And in this case, you know, they don't really let anyone know. and the treasure that they're after is literally guano. Yep. So, which has you know, value in different areas of what these guys are after. So again, you know, the mercenaries feel like they've been you know, thrown in the deep end even just by this. They're kind of like, what's going on here? That doesn't make sense. So again, perception of what things are is one of the more interesting things there is too. So this is a film that was filmed by the cinematographer Ron Schmidt, edited by Jeffrey Reiner, and the music was by Gerald Giroux and Paul Rabjohns. The music's pretty good actually in this, I've got to say, for the time. It's really, really good. It goes for 103 minutes. Now, you remember the time. The 90s were fantastic for when it came to, you know, putting out movies. They're around the 95 to 100 minute mark, and they were just bang on. Like, your plot was there, characters were there, you had a great finale. And look at now, we've got these opuses, that we've got these massive films, whether it be Jim Cameron or Peter Jackson, where they just keep going for like 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours, and just keeps going. Came out in September 3, 1994, and we also had it out in December in the United States. It's weird. Japan getting it before the States, about 2 months before. Crazy. The countries used in this film were Thailand, Spain, and United States. The budget was $6 million. So there you go. Actually, it's a lot on screen for that kind of money. Even back in the 90s, it's a lot there too. The film was based on a screenplay by John Sayles, which was called A Safe Place. It was put together in 1980. The original idea was still a mercenary one. And it's about a mercenary who basically takes a look at his life and reevaluates himself, trying to figure out where he comes upon basically the same idea. So basically, natives, or in this case, pacifist natives, who, you know, teach him about other ways of living instead of doing what he was doing. And again, the original script featured a prologue set in Afghanistan, which is interesting too. So again, we probably would have seen Dolph Lundgren's character, Gunner, doing other stuff, and definitely in the mold of, say, of the Blades character, really just the business of being a mercenary, a soldier for hire. So the filming, obviously, as we've seen there, started in Thailand and ran right through to January 1994 from December of 93. So it's a pretty quick turnaround for a film. And of course, this one tested quite well too with screenings and stuff like that too. Now, interesting about this one is that out here in Australia, it caught by just word of mouth, particularly here in Queensland. It was one that was in a lot of video magazines, if I remember right. So, you know, you get the, not in the days of Blockbuster, this is well before Blockbuster, Civic Video, Video Easy, all those original Omega Video out here in Australia. And you'd have the little local magazine, which would have all the info on these movies coming out. And Men of War was one that was oft talked about. You know, they always said, hey, this is interesting. And, you know, it may not have, you know, been the massive budgeted films of a Schwarzenegger or a Stallone film, but they were still solid entertainment and a lot of fun, I've got to say, too. So if you're going to look at something of Dolph Lundgren to that period, this is the kind of film. This, Joshua Tree, without a doubt, at his peak, I think, of that period of his life too. So, you know, interesting film, and it certainly had a heart to it, a message that, you know, not a lot of other films have, you know, particularly for that period. They were, you know, banging them out like they were in the factory, just slogging them out. And I think that's what's interesting about it too. So let's have a look at some of the trivia. Now, here's a great thing about being so many years afterwards is that we really get to see, you know, people have looked into these movies further, which is great. So the main character's name was originally Nick Riley. It was changed to Nick Gunnar to fit in with, obviously, Dolph Lundgren's Swedish background, which makes a lot more sense, obviously. When they first storm the island, the music is very similar to that of Predator. I'd love to watch that again now and thinking about that. Interesting if that's the case. John Frankenheimer was originally going to direct this at one stage. Now, that would have been interesting. Yeah, he's a hell of a director. So this movie, we get to see Dolph Lundgren bake a bowl of Swedish snus and pops it in his mouth. And he puts it basically in his lower lip, which is uncommon, with a majority of users put it under the upper lip. So again, a little bit of Swedish culture there by the sound of it. Now, as it mentions here too, Gunnar Jensen's the name of the character that he uses in The Expendables. Now, we all know the character names in The Expendables in particular are, of course, ones that they make up because they're doing mercenary work, right? So this could really possibly be a tie-in. You know, I think, you know, why not? Why wouldn't you? It's an interesting way of sort of bringing it together. And without a doubt, I think it's an interesting way to sort of bring it around. Yeah, Tim Guiney played Ockham. Yeah, this is interesting. Because Tiny Lister's character's name is Blade, right? Blades. Yeah. How this plays, that's quite interesting. This is interesting, a bit of trivia, I've got to say, is that Guinea then played the Doctor in the movie Blade with Wesley Snipes, you know, the one that gets bitten by the vampires and literally then goes down to, become a vampire, basically. And he's also in Stargate. He was in one of the Stargate movies before SG-1 finished, so... Arc of Truth, if I remember right. It's when, of course, the replicators were gone berserk. Again, great series. Come check it out. So the big moments of this film for me are, I think, the fertile moments, I think, first of all, with the characters. Dolph Lundgren meeting all of the troops at the start, getting them together, like the Dirty Dozen. It's a classic way of putting it all together. I like that. I also like the first face-off with Gunnar and obviously Kiefer. It's great. And then also when he's starting to open up to the native population on the island with obviously Charlotte Lewis and BD Wong. Because they're teaching him, they're coaching him on a different way of life. One that's no less stronger than what he's doing as a mercenary. But, you know, strength is... seeing perception in different ways, and that's why I think this film is so important and getting fun. Folks, this definitely gets a 5 out of 5 on the Joe Hallenbach scale, folks. It's awesome. So, let us know what you think of the film too, if you've seen it, and without a doubt, one that's, if you could track it down, get it, is fun. It is a lot of, great stuff you can see on screen as far as action for the time for $6 million. I think they knocked out a hell of a classic, so check that out. And we'll check you out next time. You'll see us here on the one, the only Lethal Mullet podcast.
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsus on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course Picard, plus the Orville. Also the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go on to the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Fandom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Fandom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.